Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, Findlay Mayor Christina Mern is back from the U.S. Conference of Mayors annual meeting, and she's coming home to a significant number of people who are unhappy about the planned future of the Shady Grove property. We'll talk about it. Plus, the U.S. Postal Service has designated June as Dog Bite Awareness Month. It's a serious problem in Ohio. And we'll get updates on what's happening in the month of June from the Family and Consumer Sciences and 4-H programs at the Hancock County OSU Extension. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, June 8th, 2026. I did not get the chance to see the big boy train come through because my wife and I, we were actually out of town this weekend. We had a family gathering over in the eastern part of the state, so we did not get the chance to go and see the train come through. If you missed it, though, like we did, good news, it's going to be coming back in about a month. It'll be heading the other direction, pretty much across the same route, right? So if you missed it, you will get a second chance middle part of July. It'll actually stop over for an overnight stay in Fostoria. Huge crowds in both Fostoria and in Continental. Saw all of the videos and the photographs of people along the route, not just at the designated stops, but anywhere that it crossed an intersection, a road that people could get to. I mean, there were people all over that were at. Just based on the pictures and the videos that I saw, I think more people came in to see the train than came into our area to see the eclipse a couple of years ago. I think we had bigger crowds for the train. Just huge. And I know both in Continental and Fostoria and other spots around along the way, but the big places, they were saying that people are coming in from multiple states, like a dozen different states, parts of Canada to see the train. Really, really cool stuff. So if you did not, the good news is if you did not get the chance to see the train this weekend, you'll have a second opportunity here in just a few weeks. Of course, the other big story in Northwest Ohio and really making national headlines over the weekend, the mass shooting at Toledo's Old West End Festival. Gunman shot 12 people on Saturday evening. A dozen people ranging in age from 14 to 61. The good news is that all of them, from what I'm given to understand, the story that I saw this morning, all of them, all of the shooting victims are expected to survive. So that is good news. Investigators believe the shooters were likely targeting each other, and all of the victims were caught in a crossfire. Shooters have yet to be identified, and I believe they are still at large, but tips pouring in to the Toledo Police Department, and here's hoping that they get those individuals in custody very soon and that they will face the consequences of their actions that they deserve. But a huge tragedy, shocking story over the weekend. Couple of other items here. Among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, that effort to end property taxes in Ohio will not be on the ballot this fall after all. Now, I was actually a little surprised to read this, and maybe we had it wrong. A few days ago, I could have sworn we had the story we were talking about that July 1st was the deadline to submit the petitions with the signatures and all of that. But then over the weekend, I saw the story that said that no, the deadline had passed, or maybe they've just abandoned the idea. They knew they wouldn't get the signatures. I don't know. So I'm a bit concerned. Maybe we had it wrong as to the deadline date. I'm not really sure. But the latest is this, that Axe the Tax campaign to get the initiative on the ballot to add a constitutional amendment outlawing property taxes in the state of Ohio. It will not be on the November ballot. That's the bottom line. The organization says that they do plan to continue collecting petition signatures and hope to put the measure before voters in the fall of 2027. So in the meantime, lawmakers have been motivated to take action because they don't want to see property taxes be abolished, although they continue to recognize that something has to be done to bring down property tax bills. But there is quite a bit of concern about what happened, what would happen should they be abolished entirely. So that effort will continue. We'll see if it will placate the individuals who want to see it repealed, or whether this a year from now will be something that we are talking about again. But for now, it will not be on this November's ballot. Let's see here. What else is going on? Among the first things you need to know this morning, NBA Finals continue. And Game 3 is in New York tonight. President Trump apparently will be there for game number 3. And did you see this it was last week, the official social media account for Elmo, the beloved Sesame Street character, apparently ruffled a few feathers with his post on social media about the NBA Finals. In the post, Elmo said he hopes the New York Knicks and San Antonio Spurs have fun in their NBA Finals matchup. Apparently a lot of fans are like, hey, this isn't about fun. This is serious, especially folks in New York. Both teams, it's been a while since they've had a chance to win an NBA title, but especially for the Knicks. And a lot of people took Elmo to task because the general perception is that Sesame Street is set in New York City. I know they film in New York City, and the setting is a major urban metropolitan area. It's generally presumed to be New York, but I know the creators of Sesame Street are like, it really could be any American city. But in any event, people are taking Elmo to task for not supporting the Knicks, given that Sesame Street is at a minimum filmed in, if not set in, New York City. A few fans actually called Elmo a traitor. Well, last week, Elmo followed up with his controversial post saying, "Knicks," that last message, Elmo didn't mean to spur you on. So, Elmo getting into the thick of things with the NBA Finals. And the World Cup is also beginning this week. U.S. will play their opening match in the round-robin segment of the tournament in the group stage on Friday. And apparently, God is on our side. Speaking to reporters aboard his flight to Madrid, Pope Leo, of course, the first American pope, said that he will certainly be supporting the U.S. as it prepares to compete in the World Cup. So that's as close to a heavenly endorsement as we're going to get, I think. I don't know. I'm thinking Team USA will need that kind of blessing if they hope to make it to the final. High hopes, though. High hopes for Team USA. The Pope being more direct than Elmo on the NBA Finals, as it turns out. So that was kind of interesting. Okay, a couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know this morning. The NBA Finals have everybody in New York City all abuzz. Next month, it will be Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce's wedding that New Yorkers will be buzzing about, because that is happening at Madison Square Garden in New York City. Over 1,000 people are reportedly being invited to the wedding. TMZ says the celebrity couple will be taking their vows at Madison Square Garden. It's a lovely wedding venue. I think doesn't every bride dream of getting married at Madison Square Garden? But the report said it's scheduled for July 3rd. All right. The report says that Ms. Swift and Mr. Kelsey have gone to great lengths to ensure privacy, which includes communicating with invitees by text rather than sending out physical invitations, because no text messages have ever been leaked to the public in the history of texting. No, those things never become public. But anyway, that's how everybody found out they were invited. So if you didn't get a text, then sorry, you're out of luck. I got mine. I'll be there. Not. Anyway. And also they say they chose Madison Square Garden in part because it has no windows and it has underground parking for guests seeking privacy. So, again, the dream venue for a the wedding of the century, the Madison Square Garden. New Yorkers, it says, can expect streets around the venue to be closed off during the event. High security for Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce's wedding. And lastly here, among the first things you need to know this morning, the 2026 edition of the world's 50 best beaches are out. So if you are looking for a beach vacation this summer, head to Siesta Beach in Florida. It is the top American entry, number 7 globally. Siesta Key in Florida. Let's see here. Siesta Beach also took the top spot as the best U.S. beach and best place to visit in Florida by U.S. News and World Report for this year. Other U.S. mentions in on the best beaches list include Henderson Beach in Florida and several beaches in Hawaii. So, looking for a getaway, those are the places to go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly cloudy skies today with a high in the upper 80s. Chance of showers and storms tonight, low in the 60s. A major clash is brewing over the wave of tech data centers sweeping across Ohio.
Tech giants like Amazon, Google, and Microsoft just testified at a state hearing. Those companies are now facing intense pushback from local communities across Ohio. One Jackson County farming family even turned down more than $3 million to keep developers off their land, warning the environmental risks are just too high. Microsoft promised lawmakers it will stop using non-disclosure agreements to hide details from local governments. But neighbors say secrecy is only part of the problem, and they want proof these massive facilities won't drain local water supplies or overwhelm the state's power grid.
ONN's Bryn Caswell reporting. Get more in this story on our website. Many people enjoyed the Union Pacific Big Boy Tour featuring America's most powerful steam locomotive as it traveled through Hancock County and other counties on Saturday as part of its coast-to-coast tour to celebrate America 250.
All right, we're here with Carol and Arcadia. Just watched the big boy go by. What did you think about it?
Oh, it was awesome. It was awesome. Bigger than I thought, and it went faster than I thought. So it's huge. It was longer than I thought, too. I didn't know there was going to be that many rail cars on it.
See some video of Big Boy and get reaction from people who watched it chug by in the story on our website. Findlay City Schools says it's excited to once again host Hancock County's summer lunch program this year, offering free lunches to everyone in the county under 18 years old. Hancock County Summer Lunch Program is now underway and runs through July 30th, Mondays through Thursdays from 11:30 to 12:30 at Glenwood Middle School in Findlay. The school district says the summer lunch program is more than just a meal, as there will be activities provided each day as well. Get more details on Hancock County's summer lunch program in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news anytime at WFIN.com.
So Findlay Mayor Christina Mern is back home from the U.S. Conference of Mayors annual meeting that was held last week and over the weekend in California, and just coming home to a little bit of discontent back home. Obviously, there are some folks who are not happy about the planned future of the Shady Grove property, so we're going to get into that here in just a moment. But first, Mayor Mern, thanks very much for taking the time. Talk a little bit about the Conference of Mayors annual meeting this year, and was there anything that stood out to you? Anything that, well, I know we ask you every year when you go to this, were there any ideas, things that jumped out at you, things that you said, hey, this is something we need to bring back home and implement locally? Kind of give us a recap.
Yeah, well, good morning. Thanks for having me. And yeah, it was a great conference. I came back with pages of notes on different things that I want to look into or programs that we learned about, ideas other communities are doing. I don't always like to give all the specifics because obviously things get tweaked a lot, but there's a couple of communities that were doing something similar to Block Watch, but kind of block, what do they call them, block leaders, different things like that, which I've been kind of thinking on how we can engage more neighborhoods to be giving us feedback, keeping an eye on thing and reporting back. Sat through a session about universities and community relationships and some ideas on how we continue to tie students into the community more while they're here to hopefully retain them, but also kind of just getting some ideas on how we may be able to better partner with the university. There was a really multiple sessions on data centers and just kind of learning how other communities are approaching them,
yeah.
Things that have gone well, concerns that they had. And we had folks such as power companies and power regulators all the way down to, or I shouldn't say down to, but folks from NVIDIA, they are talking about the chips and AI and the future of AI. There was some folks from federal organizations talking about different programs that are going on with the federal government, how those may be able to help, talk about homelessness and how housing continues to be a top topic. So yeah, there was lots of good stuff for sure.
I'm curious, obviously with the data centers issue, that has been very much front and center locally and around the state. Talk about housing and homelessness, and that'll actually get into some of that here in Jesse. Those are kind of known quantities. I wonder how often, like for example, with the community relations with the university and so on, how often do you hear about these things or attend these sessions and it kind of opens your eyes to an issue that maybe you didn't even realize this should be something that we're talking about? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm sure that they are. I probably more so attend sessions that we are dealing with at home, you know, because obviously there's lots of sessions every day.
Right.
I would say I do sit in on a couple. There was one I did a year or two ago. Actually, I think it was last year in Tampa that was called like The Futurist. And it was really interesting. And it was literally just like a kind of interesting think process of like, how do you not just focus on the problems at hand, but like, what if you could change one thing and there were no constraints, like what would you change? And then they kind of took you through a process of like, well, how can we maybe change that even within the constraints that you have? So, you know, my idea was, you know, how do we turn the river into a true, like large asset, right? Make it a real feature. And so we're making some steps towards that, even recognizing, you know, it's not like a river that you can necessarily swim in or do, you know, take a boat on.
Right. So given the fact that one of the things that you brought up, talking about housing and those issues, that continues to be something that we have talked about in the past. And just in the past week, there have been some steps taken to increase housing, but not necessarily locally, but not necessarily ones that everyone in the community is on board with. I do want to talk a little bit about this controversy regarding the Shady Grove annexation and redevelopment here. I know you posted a letter on the City of Findlay's webpage. You shared this on social media, kind of explaining the process a little bit more.
Yeah, so I think, you know, unfortunately, there's always folks that don't want change. And when we're looking at this, it's how do we make sure that we are mitigating all of their concerns to the best of our ability. Because when we're looking at zoning and development, I agree, we have to be mindful of where development occurs and what type of development occurs where. But along a major U.S. route and a major county road is an appropriate spot for multifamily development. And this land is conducive to a development of this size. So then we make sure that they can accommodate all of the different concerns related to drainage and setbacks and landscaping buffers and traffic flow within the site and outside of the site. And so those are all of the things that, you know, we consider as a city administration and a city council. And so I think the other thing I would mention is people keep saying, well, it's too many units. They're not going to build them all at one time. It's a two-phase project.
Right.
And if they get through the first phase and it and our community doesn't warrant additional, then they won't build out the second phase.
So one of focus in on a couple of points here. You mentioned the traffic. That does seem to be one of the key objections. And understanding that, as you rightly bring up, there's a state route and a county road at this intersection, but they are two lane. They're not designed necessarily to handle large volumes of traffic. Do you envision those routes, those thoroughfares, being expanded to accommodate the increase in traffic? Is that part of the plan?
That is always looked at, but based off of the traffic counts, and not just their traffic counts, but our kind of formula and looking at it, we are getting additional information on the whole US 224 corridor. That's something they still have plenty of capacity. So our main focus will be how do you, merge those in. And so there will be different things we'll look at that there might be in and off lanes into the development that are, you know, more of getting people off of the road into the development, things like that. I don't foresee extensive modifications necessary to the road, but that's certainly something we'll continue to monitor. You know, I had people bring up, obviously a couple years ago, we just did the light at 224 and 237 because we were seeing issues there. And that was a state project that the city helped support get done because of the number of crashes we were seeing with people because there wasn't a signal. But I think we'll continue to look at 568 and 237 as well, because I heard from people, you know, they're concerned about people coming through there. My challenge on that right now is that that's not in the city. So it's really going to just be communicating with the township and seeing how we can partner to if any modifications are necessary there.
Would it be prudent to at least put in a turn lane into that that complex, as other developments have done in previous projects?
Yeah, I foresee that happening, but okay. I don't know the specifics. We'll have to determine what, you know, what's really warranted and at which phase. Right in this first phase, it's all going to be along 224. My guess is that they will have a turn lane off of there.
The other question that was raised is how does this fit into addressing the issue of affordable housing within the community? Obviously, these are going to be higher end apartments. The developer has said that these are, you know, a lot of amenities. These are going to be very attractive to those, to a great number of individuals, but they are not going to necessarily be quote unquote affordable for all. And again, this is something we've talked about in the past. How does this indirectly impact the affordability question?
Yeah, well, if you have someone that has higher economic mobility living in something that really could be, you know, is lower cost or could be lower cost, and they're no longer seeking that out, you have less demand on that property. And now you have people that maybe don't have as much economic mobility able to get into that housing. You know, affordable to one person is affordable is, you know, it's different for everybody. So what I think we continue to stay focused on is having a variety of housing options at a variety of price points. And we do need to continue to have some lower cost options. But and the other thing I've said multiple times is I think that with the developments that we have occurring right now, that's really going to meet a large portion of our multifamily need. I don't foresee us continuing to build out more condos and villas and apartments beyond kind of what's in the pipeline right now. We really are focused on single family residential from here on out, but that creates a number of other concerns. The infrastructure cost is way higher. The long-term maintenance is much higher. And the upfront cost is much higher. So how do we make sure that we are balancing that? So we're working with council and some local partners in the state to figure out how we can continue to focus on that.
The issue that it seems many people have with this is not so much in the annexation part, but in the rezoning part for this being a high density housing area, as opposed to, like you said, perhaps single family homes or condominium development. There's already one there. Does that have more to do with that's what the developer wants to build at that location? I mean, I guess the question is, was there some discussion as to the appropriateness of such high density housing in at that particular location?
Yeah, of course there was conversation about, is it appropriate? That's the whole discussion around rezoning. I think what folks misunderstand, though, is that we don't just determine what zoning we want it to be. We only can consider what zoning is requested before us. And when we look at both what it is designated in our land use plan, it could have been a commercial operation. It could have been, you know, people talk, Menards, when they were coming to town, looked at this location. So it could have been a much more intense commercial operation, as well as under the zoning of Marion Township, it could have been agricultural business. So it could have been a hog farm, you know. And so I think we look at, is it less intense than what it has historically been planned to be? And multifamily, though, yes, it's more intense than single family, is far less intense than a commercial operation. And I think also folks, you know, high density, yeah, it is higher density, but I think that is a little bit of a misnomer because it is scary, right? And if you look, it is the same type of density as other developments in our community. And there's really not any developments in our community that you would drive through and go, oh my goodness, this is just way too intense. This is going to be miserable. And so I think it'll be a really nice mix of creating buffer from existing neighborhoods, having green space, having proper drainage, having nice housing, because they want nice development on their property as well. So they're not just shoving a bunch of people in there.
Yeah.
So I think it's a much larger space than folks realize. So when we call it high density, it is a little bit of misleading because of the lot coverage, the parking requirements, all of that.
By the way, we have a link on our webpage to the developer's webpage. You can see some of the projects that have been developed by this particular builder in the past, and specifically what kind of things that we are talking about here. You can go to goodmornings.net and learn more about that. Again, Finley Mayor Christina Mern with us this morning. Thanks very much for taking the time. As always, we appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. And, you know, we're still going to be working through city planning process, so we have lots of work still to do, but I want to just reassure folks, I know change is difficult and having something like this go near your property is scary, but we're going to work through it and make sure it's something that we can all live with and is going to be a great amenity to the community.
Well, dogs may be man's best friend, but they're not always friendly to postal workers. Letter carriers fell victim to more than 5,000 dog bites in 2025 while trying to deliver the mail, and that's why the U.S. Postal Service has launched their annual dog bite awareness campaign in the month of June. Linda DiCarlo is Senior Director of Occupational Safety and Health for the USPS. In fact, Linda, from what I see in the statistics here, Ohio is actually third on the list for the most incidents involving dogs and letter carriers last year.
That is absolutely true, and it's been in the top five for the last couple of years. You moved up a little this year, But through efforts such as this, we hope to get you guys back on track.
So the caricature of the dog chasing the mailman is certainly no laughing matter. And you can actually deny delivery service if there's an unsafe situation or a history of issues, correct?
Oh, absolutely. You know, if we find that there's an unsafe or harmful or threatening dog interaction, we have the ability to cease delivering mail. And that's not even just if it's your dog. You know, if we've seen some neighborhoods that just have dogs that are allowed to roam free.
Mm-hmm.
If our carriers feel unsafe, we're going to have you come to our post office to pick up your mail every day. And nobody wants to have to do that. So it really comes down to just being a responsible pet owner and making sure that your dog is secure at all times.
So talk a little bit about what dog owners can do. What tips would you have for individuals with dogs to make sure that they are not part of the problem?
You know, we really count on our customers to be as alert and aware as possible, and we really need them for this effort. You know, dogs perceive a mail carrier to be an intruder. You know, basically, we're invading their space.
Right.
All they're trying to do is protect their territory. You know, so the best way to keep safe is to make sure that we're teaching our dogs appropriate behavior, that we're socializing them, that they respond to commands, and especially that they're secure at all times. You know, we want to make sure that you just simply place your dog in a separate room or a secure area. Some dogs have even been known to push through screen doors and jump through windows. That's how frightened they get by having an intruder.
Yeah.
So these tips are not just for protecting carriers, but anybody who's coming to your house, even if it's a neighbor or a small child from around the block.
Yeah, that's an important point as well. And we've all seen the videos online of dogs getting out, even when they are behind a screen door or whatever it might happen to be. And you make such a good point that this is really not, we're not talking about, because I can hear a lot of people say, well, my dog's a good dog and all of that. We're not talking about just quote unquote bad dogs. This is natural behavior for a dog that sees a letter carrier or some other unknown individual as, you know, an intruder possibly. So this is just natural stuff that dogs will do, and everybody has to take this seriously. You also have technology. The Postal Service is deploying technology to protect its workers, right?
Absolutely. You know, technology supports our carrier safety in two different ways. You know, the first is that handheld scanner, our mobile delivery device. You've seen your letter carrier kind of scan your mail
mm-hmm.
so that we can prove we delivered it to you and that you get confirmation that it was delivered. But it also has a special feature that allows us to input hazard alerts, and it lets us put in a notice that a dog may reside at this address.
Hmm.
It's not saying don't deliver here. It's not saying that Fluffy's dangerous. It's simply giving an alert to somebody who may not be familiar with your residence to know that Fluffy lives there. It even lets us put in notes. You know, Fluffy is usually tied to the tree in the front lawn, but be aware, her leash is stretchy, so you need to give more distance than you think.
Hmm.
And that is great for, you know, especially in the summer months when your regular carrier may be taking vacation with their family.
Yeah.
And somebody else has to come deliver. You know, another big piece is our informed delivery service. This alerts our customers to mail and packages that are coming to their house. This lets you plan for our arrival. You know, if you're somebody who usually gets mail delivered to a central delivery box or even the mailbox on your curb, but you know today you're getting that order that you just got and that package is going to be delivered to your front step, this gives you time to plan for it and place your dog in another room so that everybody's safe.
Now, as we mentioned, the Dog Bite Awareness Campaign is an annual campaign from the USPS. Is it making a difference?
Yeah, actually, if you recall, you know, it used to be just a week-long campaign, but we moved it from a week-long to a full month, really because we are starting to see some impact. 1 week just wasn't enough time to reach everyone we needed to, especially our customers. So by expanding it to a month, we can keep the message visible longer. And as I said, it is making a difference. Nearly 850 fewer incidences last year alone. If we could continue that reduction year after year, our letter carriers and our dog owners are going to be safer in the long run.
Now, That being said, as you were mentioning earlier, Ohio actually ticked up on the list in the past year, so we have some work to do. And again, just to underscore the seriousness of this, not only can these encounters with dogs lead to your mail not being delivered, dog owners can actually be charged if their pet causes an injury as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think the most recent information that we got from Insurance Institute is that the average cost of an insurance claim for a dog bite is $58,545.
Wow.
These are considered third-party claims, and you would be responsible for the behavior of your animal.
Yeah. So it could cost you, and nobody wants that. Again, Linda DiCarlo is Senior Director of Occupational Safety and Health for the U.S. Postal Service. The dog bite awareness campaign happening in the month of June. And where can folks get more information?
We have a great deal of information available to your listeners. We urge you to go to our National Dog Bite Awareness Campaign that can be found at usps.com/dogbiteawareness. There's also a postal blog about the campaign, and we have information available on all of our social media platforms and hashtag dog bite awareness.
Certainly no laughing matter. Linda DiCarlo, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Sometimes you don't have to go very far to find the broken news in Belle Fountain, Ohio. So just about an hour south of Findlay in Belle Fountain, 48-year-old Justin Smith was arrested early Friday morning after police say he was found passed out at a local Speedway gas station. According to a police report, officers were dispatched a little before 1 a.m. on a report of a man appearing unconscious. When officers arrived, they found him seated at an outdoor patio table with his upper body resting on the tabletop, his face inside a pizza box containing leftover pizza, and an open can of Twisted Tea sitting nearby. That must have been quite a sight. Officers attempted for several minutes to wake the suspect by calling out to him, shining a flashlight in his direction, and even shaking the table. Police said he eventually responded and was disoriented, struggled to open his eyes, and had difficulty speaking clearly. Officers also smelled alcoholic beverages on the man's breath, although when questioned, he reportedly became agitated at the suggestion that he had been drinking. According to the report, Mr. Smith refused to provide his name, but was later identified through prior interactions and booking photographs. So not his first run-in with the law, obviously. Let's just say they were familiar with him. He was charged with public intoxication, obstructing official business, and resisting arrest. No word on what happened to the leftover pizza. Elsewhere in the broken news, 33-year-old Brian Swartz was arrested after leading deputies in Flagler County, Florida, on an unusually leisurely chase. It happened in the wee hours Friday morning. Not a high-speed chase, an unusually leisurely chase. Deputies spotted Mr. Swartz on his unlicensed blue motorcycle, which he called Blow By Betty, which, by the way, had no headlights and sounded like it was powered by a weed eater motor, according to the report. The pursuit reached maximum speeds of 40 miles an hour. Although, to be fair to Mr. Swartz, he did slow down to about 15 miles an hour when he was driving through the Hidden Trails trailer park. So, very considerate fugitive there, slowing down through the Hidden Trails park, a pursuit According to a Sheriff's Department official, would not call this a pursuit, they said. A pursuit implies speed. This was more of a guided neighborhood tour. The chase ended when Mr. Swart's motorcycle, we'll call it that, the broadest application of the term motorcycle, but it ended when Mr. Swartz's motorcycle toppled over, pinning him underneath it. Sheriff Rick Staley noted that Mr. Swartz, again, not an unfamiliar individual to the sheriff's department. He has been arrested 16 times over the past 10 years for various offenses. The motorcycle was impounded. He nicknamed it Blow by Betty. He wasn't blowing by the cops at all, is that? Okay. Elsewhere in the broken news, Mary Hubbard has filed, and this is in Florida, Mary Hubbard has filed a federal lawsuit against the Campbell's Company and Walmart after discovering what she claimed were moving worms in the SpaghettiOs that she purchased and shared with her daughter in June of 2024. So there were worms in my SpaghettiOs. She purchased the canned meal at Walmart in Okeechobee, Florida. After consuming portions of it, she noticed worm-like organisms within the food product. And she says she has video evidence. Both mother and child, again, she claims, suffered parasitic infections requiring medical treatment. The lawsuit seeks $75,000 in damages, alleging negligence and federal food safety violations. Walmart, for their part, said customer safety is their priority and they are reviewing the complaint. Although I don't know how Walmart can possibly be, even if it's true, I can't imagine. I mean, it's in a sealed can. I mean, it's not even a container that someone could open and tamper with and then close back up and put it in a can. I don't know how Walmart would be involved in it. But anyway, Walmart named in the suit. The Campbell's company say in the official statement, response to the lawsuit, say they believe the claims lack merit and will defend them vigorously in court. And I just thought to myself when I saw that, well, there were worms in my SpaghettiOs. My first thought was, have you ever seen SpaghettiOs? I mean, is this your first time eating SpaghettiOs? They look kind of like worms. That's, I mean, let's be honest. SpaghettiOs, that's what they kind of look like to begin with. So, not sure. Maybe it's the first time they've ever seen SpaghettiOs. I have no idea. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this out of Canada, where the Ontario Lottery and Gaming Commission has established a new Guinness World Record by hosting the planet's largest human foosball match. And this is in honor of the World Cup, which, I mean, if you ever played foosball, the idea is, you know, you have these, you know, soccer player things that you try and knock the ball into the holes at either end of the table. You played foosball before, right? You know what I'm talking about. That's kind of a soccer-based game, and Canada co-hosting the World Cup this year with the U.S. and Mexico. And so on May 23rd, they had an event at the Humber Polytechnic Lakeshore campus featuring 254 participants gripping oversized horizontal poles while attempting to score goals with a soccer ball. The largest human foosball match on the planet. The organization staged the celebration ahead of the World Cup. Soccer is about teamwork, energy, and shared experience, they said. And a human foosball Guinness World Record attempt brings those elements to life in a fun and unforgettable way. The record-keeping organization has officially verified the event qualified as the world's largest human foosball game, surpassing all previous attempts. So kudos to the Canadians. They have created for the world's largest human foosball game. Again, I haven't seen video, but I'm hoping there's video of this someplace. I'm going to have to go and look that up. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
The Riverside Civic Concert Series means great music each Wednesday night. Along with the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts, WFIN is proud to emcee another season of concerts at the Band Shell at Riverside Park. Wednesday night, the season opener with Night Jazz. Concerts are at 7 p.m. and Sunday morning at 11. We air that week's concert courtesy of Coldwell Banker Flag City. Join us on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. This is a really interesting one, and it's not real pleasant necessarily to think about, but a new survey, this is a YouGov poll of 1,100 Americans, 53% of American adults say now that they doubt that they will ever achieve the American dream. That is a dramatic shift from 2009, when three quarters believed that they either had already reached it or would in their lifetime. Now, that is completely flipped. Only 26% of those in the survey say they have achieved the American dream. 21% expect they will. Age creates a very stark divide. Just 5% of adults under 30 versus 55% of those 65 and older say that they have reached it. 70% believe the dream is harder to achieve now than it was for their parents' generation. 23% of Americans reject even the existence of such a thing as the American dream. That's pretty dramatic, isn't it? I know these are rather depressing numbers, and you got to think we need to do something to reverse that mindset. High housing costs are the number one barrier, according to those in the survey. 74% say that is a barrier to achieving the American dream, followed by the overall cost of living at 70%, and corruption, I thought was interesting, at 63%. Those are the top barriers to achieving the American dream. Now, this was interesting. Politically, there's not as big of a divide as there is when you break it down by age. Republicans show slightly more optimism than Democrats, but still 41% is all that say they have achieved the American dream for Republicans. 41%, 17% of Democrats. So it's a big difference, but still less than a majority of Republicans even. But more Democrats, and this I thought was interesting, more Democrats blame Republican policies than Republicans do blaming Democrats' policies for the difficulty in reaching the American dream. A lot there to think about in that YouGov survey, to be sure. Time to find out what's happening in the month of June. Hancock County Extension. We'll get updates from the Family and Consumer Sciences and 4-H programs. And Jennifer Little is with us from the Family and Consumer Sciences area. And also Heron Linscott. She is a new program assistant with the 4-H program. So, Heron, thank you very much for being with us as well. Let's start there. You are kind of new to the Hancock County office, are you not?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on. Yep, new to the Hancock area, new to the Hancock County office. Been here since end of March, so getting the hang of everything.
kind of thrown into the deep end, taking care of everything with 4-H, because for those who don't know, you're a little short-staffed there right now.
Just a little bit. Yeah. But, you know, trial by fire, no better way to learn. I wouldn't have it any other way. But yes. Yeah, so luckily, everyone's been super supportive, and I'm super grateful for, you know, getting to learn with such a great team around me. So yeah, it's been good.
Lauren is out on maternity leave, of course, those who don't already know. So what is going on in the month of June with involving 4-H? Because things are starting to get a little busy here.
Absolutely. Yes. June is busy for us. We just finished up Cloverbud Day Camp last week on the 4th. That was a tremendous success. We were able to host that in cooperation with the Park Service at Litzenberg Memorial Woods. We had right about 36, 38 kids attending, not to mention the camp counselors from Hancock County who were fantastic.
Right.
Everything went really smoothly. So that was great. We are gearing up for livestock judging contest, at the Hancock County Fairgrounds this Wednesday.
Okay.
That the registration window has closed, but it is still open. So welcomes are welcome. We ask folks be there by 9 if you're planning to attend. And then we are gearing up for 4-H camp at the end of the month, June 25th through 29th.
Yeah. So it's definitely not the lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. not lazy, crazy maybe, but not lazy.
That's right.
Any stretch of the imagination. Jennifer, you are very busy with respect to family and consumer sciences as well. You have a number of things to share.
Yes, for me right now, it is all about fruits and vegetables. Last Thursday night, we kicked off the Power of Produce, which is our collaboration with Blanchard Valley Health System and the Farmers Market. The Farmers Market is able to give kids ages 4 to 15, $4 to spend in tokens for the kids that are signing up for the Power of Produce. And then we, as a part of that, do family-friendly activities every Thursday night during the month of June, July, and August to keep the families busy, keep the kids engaged. Last Thursday during the market, we had over 126 kids participate along with their families. We were decorating their own market bags, so the kids had a really good time with that. I had a couple parents stop in, and they were saying that the kids were just counting down the days till Power Produce started, and they could come and do all the fun stuff at the market. So that's been a really successful program. Of course, also, people are thinking about gardening. And when we think about gardening, we think about what to do with all those fruits and vegetables. I'm in the midst of my Eat Well, Live Well series at the library, which happens the second Wednesday of every month. Mm-hmm. And we are doing a series on eating the rainbow, all the different nutrients and benefits of a variety of colorful fruits and vegetables. And then, of course, for those that do food preservation, our statewide food preservation team is kicking off their summer webinar series, and it starts tomorrow over the noon hour. So it's noon to 12:30, and it's free. And they're going to be doing those webinars every other week through the beginning of August. And they'll be tackling food preservation techniques. And so anyone who's interested in learning about food preservation or kind of honing their skills it's a great place to start. And people can go to go.osu.edu/FP, as in food preservation webinars, and learn more about that and get signed up. We also have recorded webinars that I've started with my canner inspections and dial gauge testing, and people can call our office or email me to get more information about that. So yeah, it's a busy time.
Yeah.
And of course we love to promote those fruits and vegetables for all ages.
Yeah.
Because of that nutritional benefits.
And certainly I would think that food preservation is becoming a more popular option for a lot of folks, given how much it costs to go to the grocery store these days.
Yes.
We all know, the price of everything, and this can provide a little relief anyway. So very important. I want to go back for those who may be thinking about this for the first time, go back and reemphasize the safety aspect of it with respect to food preservation, canning, the proper techniques, and, you know, making sure that you've got the right equipment and that it's working properly and all of that. I know you do it every year, but especially if folks are thinking about this for the first time.
Yeah, yes. And Extension has a lot of resources And we're glad if anyone's just interested and wants information and want to know how to get started, you know, feel free to reach out to us at the extension office. We can point you to some resources, provide information, and then just talk to you about proper equipment and how to do that. And we'll be doing some area programming with some local libraries that you'll hear more about that later in the summer, because they're obviously emphasizing those. But yeah, we are excited about, you know, gardening and the fresh produce that's coming available. And this, you know, and with, I feel like during the pandemic, many people started with gardening and have kept up with that and maybe honed their gardening skills and have a little bit more ready than they used to. So yeah.
Maybe grandma's ideas of canning and all of that were good ideas after all. And everything kind of cycles back here and seeing more and more people.
Yes, definitely. And we do know a little bit more about it than we did. So, you know, it's good. It's good to kind of get the updated information. But yes, and I will say there are people that are still using their grandmother's canners and they stay good for a long time.
For those who want more information on everything that's going on, you have more info on your website and also on the Facebook page, right?
Correct. Yes. And I sent you a couple of flyers too that hopefully you can get on your way page too. So people who hear me this morning want to know some of the things we've talked about.
And we've got a link on our webpage so folks can find that information there. And again, Heron Linscott is with us with the livestock judging you said is on Wednesday, right? And folks can still, you've had folks pre-register, but they can kind of come in that day. Is that right?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, it is for all current 4-H and FFA members. Okay. It's not just limited to Hancock County. And there's all kinds of information on our website as well. All right.
Very good. So I wanted to make sure that we highlighted that as well. Again, Heron Linscott, Jennifer Little from the Hancock County OSU Extension with us this morning with an update of everything is going on in the month of June. Very, very busy as we get into the summer months. Ladies, thank you both for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Also, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform. That will help others discover the show as well, and we thank you very much. Coming up tomorrow on the program, a good credit score means better credit terms on everything from mortgages to car loans to credit cards. But millions of Americans are credit invisible. Plus, summer is here, which means it's time to rally in the alley. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.